far side faceoff circle with a long pass to Zizek. Zizek with a two-on-one with Sullivan. Zizek moves into Sullivan's shot. Score! Jody Sullivan on the two-on-one opportunity. Buries that one past Modica, and it's a 2-1 Lakers lead. Emerson there with it. Back on the tape of Kirkby. Cross-eyes pass to Novick. Novick walks it in, waits. A little bit of an opportunity, and buries it as Kirkby off the rebound. He scores! 4-1 Lakers lead off the rebound there. Tyson Kirkby gets his first of the season.
Hey guys, it's getting pretty cold out here. Am I right? Maybe, you know, some snow or a whiteout.
I didn't think he's going to do it.
I didn't think he was either.
What?
Just stop.
What's wrong?
It is what
It's still early November, and I don't want it to be snowing yet.
You know, Ben, you're right. But we've got a great show for everyone today. Whiteout edition of the Oswegonian Hockey Podcast. So let's start the show off right.
You are listening to the Oswegonian Hockey Podcast with Matt Watling, Luke Owens, and Ben Grieco.
Welcome to the first ever Oswegonian Hockey Podcast. Matt Watling here alongside Luke Owens and our men's hockey beat writer, Ben Grieco. Guys, how you doing?
We're doing better. Whiteout soon, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, Whiteout Weekend, always obviously a special time here at Oswego. Ready to get it going.
And we'll start before we get to Whiteout with last Friday for the Lakers. They have a 6-3 win over SUNY Cortland, but they really weren't as dominant as the score might have shown.
No, I don't think so. It was the defense that fell in the last 10 minutes, and I think you guys can both attest to that. But I think special teams looked good. You know, they had, what, like 11 shots or something like that. They were moving the puck well. They got pucks in deep, which is every post-game scrum interview ever saying, we got pucks in deep. But I thought Richie played well, and I don't know about you, Luke, but...
Yeah, I mean, looking at that game, I thought in the first period, Cortland kind of came out and kind of punched the Lakers in the mouth. It was 1-1 after the first period. Then that second period, that was the Oswego State team we expect. They were fast. They were crisp
against
with their
a
passes.
Team like Cortland to mention.
Again, yeah, they were fast, crisp passes. They got a shorthanded goal with Max Novick. And then, like you said, that third period, those last 10 minutes, maybe a couple goals Richie would like back, but also a lot of traffic in front of the net there. But at the end of the day, you can't be upset with a 6-3 win, especially, you know, you look around the Suniac. Geneseo struggled against Potsdam. Obviously, we'll get into Plattsburgh later. But really, you can't complain about a 6-3 home win to start the season.
I don't think you can.
And for me, I really looked at it and I said, I was kind of disappointed with the defense. You saw a very aggressive defense that took their chances and didn't get back in time. You saw one play that really sticks to mind was, not even offensively speaking, but Carter Allen goes up to make a hit at the blue line and leaves Carson Vance on a 2-on-1 the other way. And without Carson Vance's really strong play on the 2-on-1, you could see a goal allowed. Unfortunately, when he makes the play, for the Lakers at least, you see a goal in the other direction for Fletcher. And there were just so many plays like that where they weren't being defensively responsible. And Ben, I know you were speaking to Coach Gosick and after the game, and what did he say about this performance? Because I know he was not happy about those rushes, those chances allowed.
I mean, it was not only the offensive rushes where he wasn't thrilled, or allowing the offensive rushes, I should say, but it was mainly, you know, they allowed so many odd man rushes or chances for Cortland that it was the opportunities that, not even just the three goals that he said, he was basically like, you know, it's more so the opportunities where SUNY Cortland had so much offensive time in the zone and got the opportunity to set so many plays up where he was kind of disappointed. But I think flip side, basically, was that this Oswego State defense was doing well at pushing the puck forward, but they were still going up in units of like two or three without all five to keep the puck in the zone. So I think it's the defense needs to realize when to play offense and when to play defense.
Yeah, and then kind of bouncing off that, Ben, one thing that Cortland did, I'm not sure if Oswego State was expecting it or what, but Cortland was kind of content with sitting back in their own defensive zone, just kind of keeping the Lakers off the net, kind of avoiding those rebounds where Oswego State's been so effective in those tight areas. So we'll see if that continues this weekend, if Plattsburgh State says we're kind of going to do the same thing, sit back, don't let Oswego gun it down the ice and kind of beat you on those three-on-twos, make sure your defense is set. So I think that's what Cortland did, and they did it very effectively, especially in that first period and towards the end of that third period.
Yeah, and just looking at the special teams for Oswego State, they kill off all four attempts or penalties that they drew. They don't score on any of the three, but I know Gosick was happy with the puck movement. This was really the first game where he saw his units in action. Those first two exhibition games he played, he rolled the lines to see what would look best, didn't do a lot of practice with it. And you saw Carson Vance on that top unit, really quarterbacking that power play, I should say. And for me, I thought he looked really good. He was the fastest guy out there on the ice. He looked so poised with the puck. He was so smooth at skating, and you really just saw the D1 qualities in him as a transfer from Western Michigan.
I think the biggest thing to point out, though, is that, one, I don't think these units are set in stone, as they shouldn't be yet, because like, it's only the first week. But I think the biggest thing is that you're missing, and this is still kind of to be determined, but you're missing a guy like Michael Gillespie on the power play, which is what I kind of wanted to bring up with Gosick. He wasn't in the game against Cortland, which I can only assume was something that happened with after the exhibition against Nazareth, his kind of post-whistle play. But either way, I think the big thing is that he was one of those players that would hit the back door every single time on the power, not every single time, but majority of the time on the power play. And you're missing a guy like that to really set something up. But Carson Vance, like you said, Matt, looked good. Max Novick looked good on the power play. And those are the two defensemen that you want running your power play.
Yeah, and last year, like you mentioned, Gillespie, Novick, those are kind of two guys that seem to find each other every single time on that effective power play unit. One of the best seasons in NCAA Division III history in terms of power play unit for Oswego State last year. But going back to Carson Vance, one thing I really noticed about him is his hockey IQ is just off the charts. You can tell he comes from a D1 school. He knows his positioning. He stays in his zones well. And that's what I really like about Vance. He just brings that IQ. Not the heaviest shot in the world, but he knows how to get the puck to the net.
Yeah, and kind of one last thing to tie a bow on last weekend, being that it was only one game, only the first weekend. We alluded to it before with David Richey and Nett. Allowed a couple of bad goals, and I put that in air quotes because they weren't all his fault. You know, that second goal, Gosick described to Ben as a hockey goal, one that you don't want to give up, but you kind of understand that the bounce are going to go that way. But that third goal off the faceoff, looked off, right off the faceoff, looked like a screen, but is that kind of a goal you'd want back?
I wouldn't even consider, okay, this is going to sound weird. It's not a screen when it's that far ahead of the goaltender, especially that low of a shot.
What do you mean, that far ahead of a goalie?
So, like, okay, so if you were at the game, well, Matt, you were obviously at the game. The player was at the corner of the blue line, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
That far corner. Richey has so much time where if he just goes into the butterfly and knows there's a shot coming, which he can see a little bit past that screen. It's not like he was screened to all get out. He sees that stick shot that wrist shot coming low. As soon as you go into the butterfly, that's stopped.
I mean, and Luke, I know we were watching the footage of the game, and we saw the goal, and to me, it was really, he was right there, and there was a guy right in front of him, pretty much almost off the opening draw. And we've seen a lot of these plays. I know, I can remember one at Plattsburgh, the away game that they had last season, where he let up almost an identical goal. And I don't want to say that Richey needs to make those saves, like it's his fault, but for this team to be where they want to be at the end of the year, Gosick says you need a .930 save percentage. That's the kind of save that an elite goaltender makes.
I think the thing to point out, too, is that it is the same exact goal that kept Oswego from pushing overtime in the Suniac Championship, too, where it was from that kind of that deeper spot, a wrist shot that Richey was actually screened on. And those are the goals that Oswego State wants to limit because, again, it turns a 2-1 game into a 1-1 game and sending it to overtime.
Yeah, I think
it's simple as that.
I think there's two ways you can look at that goal. Number one, yeah, there were bodies in front, and if there's that many bodies, you want to make a block. But also, it's right off the faceoff. And one thing that Richey has really stressed to us when we've talked to him this season so far is, I want to work on my positioning. You know, even if the shot doesn't get through, I need to be in the right position. And I think that's one where he probably wishes he dropped to the butterfly maybe a split second earlier. And that's the save he wanted. You could tell in his body language after that puck went past him, he kind of dropped his head. I think he even might have broken his stick. I know he went to the...
Yeah, I think he grabbed Hansen's stick.
Yes, he went to the...
Because it was a different brand. He had a CCM stick and grabbed a Bauer stick. I was like... That is so weird.
That's the analysis we want on this podcast. We need to know the brand of the stick, and that's what our beat writer brings.
Well, that's really advanced analytics, man.
Like, that's what threw me off. Like, I look at the goal, and then all of a sudden, Richey's skating toward the bench, and the referee has the paddle of the stick. I'm like, oh, that's weird. What the heck? And then I see it's CCM, and he grabs another one, and Hanson's like, oh, I guess I'll give you mine, and hands him a Bauer stick. Right. I was like, well, I guess you done messed up there, bud. Like.
Yeah, for real. And we'll move on briefly from the men's team now to the women's team that had a pair of road games. And they end up winning both of them in Vermont against Castleton. And Castleton last year, they were a pretty good team. 11-14-3 overall, 9-5-2 in the conference. And you look at last year for the Lakers. They faced Wilkes and Kings, who combined for one win on the season. This Castleton team's much better than those two.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Well, you got to have a better team when you have Olivia Ellis as your graduate assistant coach, former Oswego State Laker captain. She's at Castleton, if you guys didn't know.
Right, and we'll just get into these two games. And Oswego State wins 5-2 in the first one and 3-2 in the second. And to me, it's so impressive that they were able to kind of consistently put up those goals. This is a team that we're not used to generating a lot of offense. But for me, they generate just a ton of shots like we're used to in 83, and that shooting percentage gets to just under 10%. And for a team, the average is usually around 15. For Oswego State, it's usually more around 6 or 7 because they're more of a volume shooting team. And if this is a team that can shoot 10% the entire season, I think they might surpass all of our expectations.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that they've added this season to kind of help it out is a lot more skilled forwards, a lot better handling the puck, a lot better getting rebounds. Because you mentioned those high-volume shots. A lot of those shots for this Oswego State team last year came from the point, and they would kind of just be thrown wide of the net, no opportunities for rebounds. But with these additions, and then you also have forwards like Aaron Stewart that have been here for a while, there's some really good combinations on this Oswego State team, and I think there's a lot of reason for fans and for the players as well to be excited about this group of players.
I talked to Coach Dillon, too, earlier this week for my internship, and she even said, like, Aaron Stewart's one of the toughest kids you'll play in our league. She's like, quote, a pound-for-pound player, basically. Like, she was like, yeah, she's only 5'3", but she's probably one of the toughest players we have on the ice, to be honest with you. So I think she's going to be a player to watch, definitely. Even a senior, who's someone who hasn't scored a ton. She wasn't always, you know, she's not a flashy player, I don't think at all. She just does the right thing, and it's those quiet players that help you.
Yeah, and for this Lakers team, it seemed like they were almost built on these quiet players. You look at her, you look at Leah Sherwinski as one of them, someone that's going to get goals, but also at the same time, they're not flashy. It's right in the corner of the net, really in those gritty, those dirty areas. And for this team to now add in this freshman line of Megan Teachout, Morgan Shines, and Mia Conboy, we saw them in the exhibition game against William Smith. They look so good. They bring that talented punch that Luke was talking about earlier, where you want that balance, where you have that kind of veteran grit, but having this kind of almost excitement. I mean, watching Teachout play when she had that extended shift and scored her second goal against William Smith, there was this youthful exuberance that we didn't really see in this team before when she scored that goal.
I think, at least from Teachout and a little bit of Shines as well, both of those players do something that I don't think any Oswego State forward has done in the last 2 years or 3 years, that they're able to get the puck off the ice for a wrist shot. Where a lot of the times these forwards are just throwing them right at the pads, hoping for like a five-hole or hoping for a rebound, where both of Teachout's goals went top corner every time. And I think getting that power up, both on the slap shot and the wrist shot, is going to be a key for the Lakers this year, just because, they haven't had that really since probably like Olivia Ellis.
Yeah, another thing Teachout does so well is just carrying the puck into the offensive zone. I mean, we saw in that William Smith game especially, she was pretty much entering the zone one-on-four at some points, and she was controlling the puck, letting her teammates get a line change, and then setting back up. And, you know, really this whole freshman line is very impressive. I mean, Teachout, of course, was the one that stood out to us. But, I mean, Morgan Shines, Mia Conboy, this is a very talented freshman line. And we'll see if Coach Dillon keeps them together. But I think they've been working together really well.
I think another thing to point out, too, is that one of the key new players also isn't even a freshman. It's Amber Thomas, where now the Lakers are able to control the faceoff circle in the offensive zone. And at the same time, kind of like, again, this is going back to a couple years ago, but Andrea Nass during, it would have been our freshman year, I think, a couple years ago, where she just controlled the faceoff circle the entire time. She at least did that against William Smith, where Amber Thomas is able to get in low and just kind of shove the other center out of the way. So I think that's going to be a key part for the Lakers in the offensive zone to get chances, but also clear out of the defensive zone.
And Amber Thomas also adding on a couple of assists in this opening weekend to the season. And just looking back at that freshman line that we talked about, Teachout, 3 points last weekend. Shines, 2. Conboy had an assist as well. And something that's kind of interesting from last year that I wasn't really expecting is the team now has Emily Gustafson from the start of the season, whereas last year, as a freshman, she was still in cross-country mode. She didn't participate in the SUNYAC championship, I believe, as she had started her women's hockey career, I should say, or season a bit earlier. And I wonder how much more comfortable she is now as a sophomore, being able to experience that second exhibition game, whereas last year she couldn't really experience any of that.
I think it's more she's used to being a dual sport athlete now, too. Or, yes, getting in a little earlier helps, but now she knows the transition from running on ground to basically sliding on ice the entire time. You know, ground, you're relying on, you know, the downhills. You're relying on something to push yourself off of, where on ice you're just really gliding there, and you're on this flat surface the entire time. So I think that transition she's been key in doing that this year.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a cliche because obviously she's a very talented cross country runner, but she's just so fast on the ice.
Oh yeah,
extremely fun to watch. One of those forwards that's kind of also one of those power forwards, gets down the edges fast, and I think she's going to be an exciting player. And like you said, Matt, I think having as much time as possible with the team can only help.
Yeah, and just kind of put a bow on this past weekend, the power play scores 3 goals. They're at 25% with 12 opportunities. Last year, they had 6 goals on 97 attempts for 6.2%, which is absolutely atrocious. And you kind of saw that. Their offense just wasn't very good last year, and it seems to be a bit different this year. You look at the goaltending, you know, Rachel Farmer, she's going to start a lot of games with only one goaltender behind her in Tia Travato, the freshman. And she performed well. 36 saves, 4 goals allowed. Not a lot of volume, though. Only 20 shots faced. This is kind of a team that, especially when you look ahead to Plattsburgh, she could face 40 shots in a single game. So having her really at the top for a game, which I expect to some degree for this weekend, is the only shot they really have at a chance of beating Plattsburgh. And not a knock on the Lakers, just Plattsburgh hasn't lost a single game in the last 2 years of new HL play.
Only 2 years of new HL play, but it's okay.
That's the same thing, Ben.
I'm just saying. It's only been 2 years. Never mind.
All right, boys, relax. But yeah, with Farmer, you get a goaltender. She's used to facing a high volume amount of shots with Cortland, a defense that wasn't as good in front of her. And this is a very veteran Lakers defensive core that I think is going to help her out. But like you said, I mean, it's going to be tough sledding for this Lakers team, but Coach Dillon kind of said, you know, we're just going to focus on us. We want to get better each and every week. It's so early in the season. You're not really expecting to beat a Plattsburgh team that, like you said, has been historically great, number one in the nation right now, coming off a national championship.
Now, unfortunately, that's all the time we have right now for women's hockey. Coming up, it'll be my favorite segment of the podcast.
It's time for the coach's comments.
First up, we'll hear from Lakers captain Josh Zizek, who spoke about the Cardinals' swarming defense and how the Lakers can get shots on net.
Moving that puck from side to side quick, getting those guys moving. Like you said, they don't move much, but any movement is going to open up a lane, even if it's for like a split second. So get that puck moving pretty quick and get that puck to the net and have your low guys jump and crash that net and start banging bodies. And it might not be the prettiest of goals, but any goal is a goal and it counts. So.
You know, and Zizek saying any goal is a goal, it's almost easier said than done to a certain extent when you have a team like Plattsburgh that collapses the net so well. They're a team that's just so defensive that it's hard to open up those seams.
Yeah, and when the Lakers do get those seams, they've got to hit them hard, like Zizek said. And he talks about crashing in front of that, getting those bodies in front. The Lakers have so many forwards that are willing to get down there, get gritty. I mean, Zizek, a guy like Mitch Emerson also comes to mind. Guys that are willing to go down and make those plays on rebounds against a very physical Plattsburgh defense, I think are going to be the key to putting the puck in the back of the net.
Yeah, most definitely. And we'll move on for our last audio clip of the week, and it's Coach Gozick talking about the rivalry and how it's kind of marquee not only among Oswego and the SUNY system, but also all of D3 sports and all of D3 hockey. So let's take a listen.
It's awesome for both teams and both schools to have something like that, because there's not a lot of rivalries in D3 in any sport. You know, I mean, there's enough, you know, Cortland and Ithaca and the Cortica, whatever, in football and some of the others, but you talk to people in D3 sports in general, and you know they'll bring up a Oswego-Plattsburgh rivalry.
Right, and kind of saying what he said, you hear the importance of this rivalry, and it's just kind of interesting to see how they pass down the rivalry from year to year. And even with Gosick still being there, you know, you lose Emery to retirement, Moffitt takes his place, and the rivalry never misses a beat.
I think one thing I want to point out, too, is that Gosick mentioned the community. I mean, outside of, like, Oswego State hockey, like, what does Oswego really have, you know? Yeah, they have youth hockey, they have the high school team, but, like, they don't have that one thing that really draws them together other than 3,000 people in the Murano Capa Center.
Yeah, there's no real professional hockey team around here.
Not even just hockey.
But even that in general, you look at some of the biggest rivalries in football, and you say University of Alabama. They have big rivals, and that's what people do down there. They go to watch Alabama. They go to watch college football, and I think that it's almost understated how important Oswego State's hockey team is, even though it's D3.
And I think the biggest thing, too, is that the Lakers also implemented those junior Lakers this year, which is like bringing in the community for the team. Carter Allen even said it's cool to see it full circle. You know, like we were once those kids that were watching a junior team or a college team, something like that. So I think this is big for the community as well, not just the guys on the team.
Right. And this last quote from Gosick really kind of brings us into what you spoke about or wrote about, Luke, I should say. Give us a couple, I guess, key dates that really bred this rivalry.
Yeah.
Bred.
It really all starts in 1980, when the Oswego State men's hockey coach Herb Hammond actually left the Oswego State program to go to Plattsburgh. And this is because the Oswego State program at the time was not willing, or I should say that the school was not willing to fund the program enough to the level that Hammond wanted it. Plattsburgh was kind of up and coming. They were young. They were fun. They poured a lot of money into their hockey program, and Hammond left, and that left a lot of people in the Oswego town very bitter. And then flash forward to 1987. The two teams meet for the national championship. Plattsburgh wins that game 8-3. They won the season series that year 6-0. Of course, later they would have to vacate the NCAA title, but then 1987 was really when this rivalry began to kind of reach a fevered pitch. And then the 06 SUNYAC semifinals, Oswego trailed 3-1 in that game. The last game at Romney Fieldhouse, they scored to make it 3-2 with 11 minutes left in the game. And then a bagel is tossed on the ice, results in a two-minute delay of game penalty. Plattsburgh scores a power play goal, and they end up winning that SUNYAC semifinal game. So a big win for them. And then kind of to wrap it up, in last year, 2019, Oswego State defeating Plattsburgh 3-2 in the SUNYAC semifinals. So there's been a lot of big games, a lot of big moments between these two teams.
Right, and just kind of going back to that bagel moment, that was sort of a tradition here at Oswego State where fans would throw bagels on the ice to kind of feed the birds. That was in response to Plattsburgh throwing tennis balls, as I believe it was Coach Unger was also the tennis coach.
Right, he was, and that was kind of something that, leading into one of my favorite moments with this rivalry, is, yeah, that did happen, but what kind of stemmed from the bagels and the tennis balls being a little bit too much was this whiteout game where Coach Gosick and the players and athletics kind of sat down and said, you know, we want to do something more fun. We don't need it to be coming into students throwing bagels on the ice and causing games to be kind of changed. So they start whiteout weekend, and boy, has it been fun ever since.
You know, you talk about the bagels a lot, and Matt, you always talk about Long Island bagels.
Oh, yes.
For once, the bagels did something wrong. But
These weren't Long Island bagels.
How do you know? How do you know students didn't bring them up?
They were dining hall bagels that were handed out actually by the dining hall staff.
Yeah. How do you know they didn't bring up Long Island bagels?
Who would waste a lovely, delicious, fantastic, 9 out of 10 rated by our very own Luke Owens, Long Island bagel?
Can't confirm.
I don't know.
I wouldn't.
I'll do it. I'll do it just for you, Matt.
I have nothing to respond to that. Luke, getting back to the important stuff. You know, you kind of look at this rivalry. It's been going on for decades. And the impressive thing is, players only here 4 years. They might only get 2 or 3 whiteouts. How does this rivalry kind of get passed down from player to player?
Well, the reason why it's been passed down is because both these programs have just been so excellent. I mean, they both have a commitment to hockey. They're the only two SUNYAC programs to win a national championship, Plattsburgh with 2, Oswego State with the 1 in 2007. I mean, they're nationally ranked all the time. They compete for SUNYAC championships basically every season. I mean, the games and how close they've been recently kind of right themselves. And that's really what's sustained this series and this rivalry, is when players come to these schools, they realize the magnitude of this game and really the magnitude of the programs in terms of the landscape of Division III hockey.
Right, and kind of just moving on to, I don't want to say preview the weekend, because we've been talking about it for the last 20 minutes or so, but looking at these two teams as a whole, this is a Plattsburgh team that's completely different than Oswego State. Plattsburgh's dropped their first two games of the season, both conference games, to Geneseo and Brockport, but at the same time, you know, talking to Coach Moffitt, they've had 11 freshmen play at least one game, the complete opposite of the Lakers, who I said, who have 12 seniors on their roster. So for that, it's so difficult for the teams to have the freshmen really work and interact.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of just, like you said, Matt, it's kind of ironic where literally next year, that's going to be Oswego State spot, is that they're going to have these, you know, 12, 13, however many, hopefully, at least for the Lakers, to replace all 13 seniors, rather, that they're going to bring in all these recruits to replace what they're losing. So it can be a completely different story next year. But that's way ahead of our game.
Yeah, I think for Plattsburgh State this year, it's been about who's going to score for you. I think that's going to be the biggest question going into this matchup. I mean, it is an 0-2 start, but it's not the end of the world. They outshot Brockport and Geneseo on both those games, and kind of not bad luck, but I mean, goalies are posting a .965 save percentage against them this year, so you don't expect that number to be as high, but it's about kind of capitalizing on the few mistakes that Oswego State's going to make, and what a tough environment for these freshmen to head into their first true road game.
Right, and you talk about them, you know, out shooting, but at the same time, they're a slower team. And when you look at a team like Plattsburgh from an X's and O's standpoint, they get these rushes and these chances, but they don't get that second wave of attack. They get their 3-on-2 rush, whatever it is, they get their shot on net, but they're not the first ones on the rebounds. And for this team against a team like Oswego State, that's so much faster than them, they need to figure out a way to extend zone time, because when they do, and you saw what their two goals were, where defenseman Matt Arajo scored both two goals they have this season, it makes a big difference. When they activate their defense, they're such a better team offensively, and it's tough because they're just a step slower than the Lakers. And then you look at the Lakers' forecheck, and they're so aggressive where you're going to have a guy on you as a defenseman within a split second. You've got to make these decisions rapid fire.
Yeah, you're right, Matt. And also another one of those things that Plattsburgh's going to try to do is go from defense to offense. I mean, you mentioned the defensemen that can score. They've got to kind of pick their chances because, as you mentioned, they're not the first players on the rebound, but they might want to try to employ that strategy against Oswego State, who last year let up some healthy rebounds in a lot of games, had some trouble clearing in front of their own net, and we know Richie sometimes struggles on those second, third opportunities. So not like they're going to all of a sudden become faster in a week, but you've got to kind of have that support. When your defensemen are attacking on offense, you've got to have some forwards flanking or something to get some rebounds, because if it's one shot and done, that's really not an effective strategy, especially against a team that's more skilled, like a Geneseo and like an Oswego State this weekend.
Yeah, and kind of just looking now one last thing before we move to Potsdam, I should say, is their goaltender, Jimmy Pareda. He's got Duke two games played, an .881 save percentage and a .250 goals against. Talking to Coach Moffitt, he said, you know, that first game against Brockport, Pareda didn't seem ready. He even said to Coach, you know, he didn't feel right. So the fact that he got that much better against Geneseo, they give up two power play goals, Moffitt saying that it wasn't really Pareda's fault. He's a guy that we really expect to be dominant in net, regardless of what his stats say.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jimmy Pareda, not to, you know, disregard all, you know, 20-something players that are actually skating on the ice the entire game. But, you know, I think Jimmy Pareda is kind of the glue of this team right now, where he's probably been the guy that is going to be like...
No, I'll say he's been their best player. You know, you need your goaltender to be your best defensive player, but he is so talented. He's a guy that's just really an incredible goaltender that...
I guess I'm trying to say he's the kind of player that's been there, though. You know, he's played in how many games against Oswego now? He's one of those players that these freshmen can look to, and to your point, he has been one of their best players.
Yeah, and you lose so much offensively last year. I mean, you talk about Egan and Owens and Stoller. There's so many names on offense. So it really does come down to how can Pareda kind of stand on his head like he did 2 years ago in that whiteout, that 1-0 win where Oswego really outshot the Cardinals by a bunch, and Pareda stayed strong. He didn't allow a single goal. It's going to have to be one of those games from him again where Plattsburgh's going to grind it out, try to score 1-2 goals, and then sit back with that good defense in front of a good goaltender. And also another thing that Moffitt said was Pareda's a guy that he knows when he makes mistakes. He's, you know, one of those last guy on the ice types of player where he's not going to let those mistakes last weekend define him. He's going to come back even stronger this weekend.
All right, we'll briefly move on to Potsdam, and it's a team that's kind of rebuilding, in a sense, projected to finish 7th in the preseason rankings. There's not a lot here with it. You know, they've got solid goaltending, but what else do you really have in this team?
Yeah, win against Geneseo, that's what you have.
A tie, whatever.
A tie's a tie against Geneseo.
Just watching that overtime, it was Geneseo. I think they must have had the puck in Potsdam's end for 4 of the 5 minutes. It was a tie, but it didn't really feel like, in terms of gameplay, it felt like Geneseo just couldn't sneak one past their goaltending.
Yeah, Potsdam to me feels a lot like that Cortland team Oswego State saw last weekend, where not a ton of offensive production, actually a little bit more than the Red Dragons, but they bring back a bulk of their scorers. They only lost 5 seniors. They did lose their goaltenders, but sophomore Michael Pagluka has been incredible this year. I mean, a .926 save percentage, facing a lot of shots. But they've been very undisciplined so far this year. 17 penalties, averaging 8.5 penalties per game. And you really don't want to let that Oswego State power play get kind of acclimated and let them get them out of many opportunities. So if they want to pull the upset like they did a couple years ago on Whiteout Weekend, they're going to have to stay out of the box.
All right, that'll just about wrap things up here on the Oswegoan Hockey Podcast. Guys, thank you for joining me. And thanks to Sal Miliato of WNYO for the goal calls from last weekend against Cortland at the top of the show, as well as the studio space here from their podcasting studio. So yet again, we'll catch you guys next week with another episode of the Oswegoan Hockey Podcast.